This is Pure Decking, show number 314 for Thursday, July something. 19th? 20th?
19th. July
19th, 1964. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out who rigged the game is, and reminding you that there's a special place in hell for people who cook fish in break room microwaves.
Ew. God damn, man. You had to bring that up.
Every other fucking day! Walk out in the hallway and it smells like the toilet exploded. Nope. That's just a fucking fish in the microwave again. God.
Sorry. Is it better than popcorn or oatmeal?
Popcorn's okay. At least that one doesn't smell like, you know, somebody's, you know, emptying their bowels into the trash can in the break room. That one just smells like popcorn. Oatmeal? Was people making a mess or something?
It was half the mess and half the... Oh, my God, that smells delicious.
Oh, okay.
It really depends on what type of oatmeal they're deciding to cook in the microwave.
I don't mind them cooking something that doesn't smell bad. It's when you walk in the break room and it smells like the bathroom's clogged up. I'm Orps, and tonight I have RU486.
Well,
what are we drinking tonight, sir?
A large glass of irradiated water with a side of asbestos.
Well, at least you know it's sterile.
Mm-hmm.
We have a rather drunk off his ass laser.
Kudos to you, good sir. I happen to be drinking a fine Merlot.
Please say you're also eating Cheez-Its.
Sad to say, I ate those yesterday. I do not have any left. So I am eating eggs and sausage instead.
With a Merlot. Okay. That's a breakfast wine.
That kind of works. Static, what are you drinking?
I have some Woodford Reserve with a healthy dose of an insulin pump injection.
Woodford Reserve in the insulin pump. I don't think I've heard that one.
No, you'll die.
I'm going to try this.
And Madman. What have you got, Madman?
I'm drinking Leinenkugel's Summer Shandy. Yes, it's a pussy beer. Bite my ass.
I was going to say, are you eating tofu and soy with that?
Leinenkugel. German. Mm. Summer Shandy is beer with lemonade in it.
You know, it's probably not half
soy
bad.
Chips?
Pretty good.
It's your soy chips with the estrogen dip with that beer?
You just need to drink two of them. Damn it. I can drink two beers.
The time frame is notable. I will understand.
So what I've done tonight is I had the tail ends of a bunch of different whiskey bottles. I had some Old Forester 1920. I had some Bullet. Just a little bit of Woodford's and a chunk of Basil Hayden. And I combined all of these into the one remaining bottle.
And did you mix it with a packet of grape Kool-Aid? Because we'd call it hooch at that point.
No. I just mixed them all up, and you know what? It's not bad. It's a lot milder than I would expect, but
a lot more mellow.
Yeah, it's mellowed it out a little bit.
Is it kind of like suicide like we had as kids, but you know, for adults?
Well, there's no vodka, a lot of these whiskeys.
There's no rum or anything in it, so
it's mostly bourbons and whiskeys that all have fairly similar profiles. So it's not quite like a suicide where it's just like sugar, but it has a discernible. I mean, it still definitely mostly tastes like bourbon. So
now just blended bourbon.
Yeah. Would you say it's a lower quality bourbon, or is it just still maintain the quality of the exceptional bourbons that you mixed with it?
It's not bad. It's better than like a straight Jim Beam or Jack. So it's not bad. I'm going to play with the concept some more. I got the idea after hearing about this concept called an infinity bottle, which is where once you find a blend you like, you constantly, you know, refill that pot, that your bottle with the blend you like. Just every time you buy a new whiskey, you add to it. You know what I mean? So huh. I thought it was an interesting concept, and since I had a bunch of little stuff laid around. Oh, Psychros. Psychros says Basil Hayden is delicious. You know, I thought it was all right. I didn't go for it like I do like an Eagle Rare or a Woodford's, but it was all right. I mean, there's a good chunk of it in this blend, so I mean it's definitely not a bad blend. I don't know what you'd call it other than just, you know, the tail ends of a bunch of stuff mixed up. But it kind of worked.
It's just a blended whiskey at that point.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean,
the fact that you're putting in high-level whiskeys is increasing the quality, but
yeah. But, well, sure. I mean, it's not like I'm grabbing any like $100 whiskeys and putting them in there or anything. Because so. Then somebody, there'd probably be a couple of people driving down here to inform me of my mistake.
Hey, yes, guys, with a police baton or a baseball bat.
Let's all mix this together.
Oh shit! So, anyways, let's move on to the news stories here. So, the first one is actually HookTube, which I know I've covered this in a Digital Dojo not too long ago, but specifically on HookTube, the changelog, because that's where they put the post. It says, "Rest in pieces. It was a good run." 1.5 years, started as a quickly made addition to the Norbot project, and within long the server had been upgraded several times. Of course, YouTube Legal was an inevitability at that point. Special thanks to the many people who created plugins and extensions for HookTube, G, the 5 people who donated anonymously, and BitChute for working hard on a real YouTube alternative. HookTube will remain operational in present state for those who need it for performance reasons. See you in the next project. July 16th. YouTube API features are back, but MP4 video is replaced with the standard YouTube embed. HookTube is now just effectively a lightweight version of YouTube and is useless to the 90% of you primarily concerned with denying Google data and seeing videos blocked by your governments. So...
Well, fuck.
Yeah... I'm guessing YouTube Legal got a hold of them and threatened them with all of the lawsuits.
I tell you, man, this year has been the year for losing a lot of stuff.
Like losing a lot of capability or losing a lot of websites? A lot of
piracy channels, things like that. Streaming services. I'm chasing my tail trying to keep up with it. Crazy.
Well, I decided not to do the story, but the guy in Britain who was selling Kodi boxes, he got sentenced to like 1.5 years in jail.
Oh, jeez.
So yeah.
That's nuts, man. All right, HookTube, we're gonna have to find something else now.
So there's a few different projects spinning up on Reddit of people trying to make replacements, but the problem is if any one of them gets popular, the same damn thing's going to happen because it's not like you have any kind of a legal right to use the YouTube API. What really needs to happen is we need to come up with some kind of a decentralized video hosting platform. I'm thinking a la, what was the Facebook clone? Started with a D.
No idea.
No clue. Demastrodon. It's a dinosaur name.
Demetrodon?
What?
I don't know. I was naming off a dinosaur name that started with a D. Sorry.
There's a couple of different ones. There's also the Twitter clone, and its name escapes me at the moment, too. Mastodon. Okay, Mastodon is what I was thinking of, where everybody can spin up their own, and then because it's the protocol understands that multiple servers exist. So... apparently Cypress is saying MPS YouTube is a command line ad-free player for YouTube. So I guess it's doing the same thing that HookTube was doing just locally. But that's also going to be a Linux-only thing probably. Which is fine by me, but probably useless for a lot of people who are just gamers. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, though, right? I mean, because everybody is giving their videos to YouTube to host, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he says
except
it's Python.
For the small minority that does Vimeo or something.
Well, and that's a very small minority. He says it's Python, so yeah, you can probably run that on anything.
Vimeo just doesn't have the quantity or the quality.
Oh. Right. And that's the thing, right? Is because the reason everybody flocked to YouTube is because you could actually make money off your videos. At least you used to be able to. I don't know if that's still true or not, because it seems like they've really gamed that system.
Depends on what your videos are. A lot of people are still making decent money.
Are they?
Yeah, the only ones that are really getting crapped on are people that move into the political genres. If you're doing makeup tutorials and video game playthroughs, you're not being hurt that much yet. Although the video game playthroughs are starting to get hit because idiot publishers don't realize if I'm watching somebody playing a video game, I might
think,
hey,
advertising.
That's a fucking awesome looking video game. I might buy it.
I think that's how I first, because you remember how we all started Fortnite before it really took off? That's because I saw some people streaming it and tried it and then said, hey, we ought to try this.
Yeah, I found a new game this morning that'll be coming out on Steam in fall.
The whole sharing a video game by, you know, word of mouth is crazy that most advertisers don't figure out that that's an actual thing.
Hey, Laser, I know you're drunk, dude, but try not to step on everybody, man.
Sorry.
That's fun.
World War III is coming out. Looks like he's going to be a decent runner against Battlefield 5 without the politics. Looks to be good. And I saw that from a dude who was just showing some early release gameplay.
Yeah.
And then that just popped up and when I was scrolling through YouTube because it was related videos because I was watching some other video. So, yeah, they have no idea of... I think they do have an idea, but they only want certain game channels to be playing it. I know of one very large game channel that refuses to play games that advertisers want them to and just play whatever they want.
And today we're playing Half-Life 2, because fuck you.
Is he a Swedish meatball?
No, he's a UK streamer. And he actually showed his email account where it had all these games from EA going, please play our game and we'll give you X amount of dollars. All you have to play is 10 minutes of it for this amount of dollars. He's like, fuck off. Oh.
Yeah,
I think
because
they only want the big number of players playing their games.
Yeah.
So why not set up a judgment-proof company or entity, whatever, and roll your own?
Oh, you could totally roll your own video hosting site. I mean, bandwidth costs would be kind of high.
No. Roll the, brain function.
What, make your own hook tube?
It's been a long day. Yeah, hook tube. There we go. That was the name.
There's
before.
A few people who, I saw some posts on Reddit of people trying to spin up replacements, but,
But you said even when they get big, though.
Yeah, as soon as they get big, they get shut down. But, I mean, if you're running a website, you're not judgment proof because they can always order you to shut it down.
But if you are judgment proof, just bounce from carrier to carrier, right?
Well, even better would be to open source the code.
Boom. Yep.
Because then anybody can spin it up. But of course, the moment they change the API, you know, you have to update the code and put it out, and it'll get pulled down pretty quick off things like GitHub. So, I'm not quite certain how to approach that. Truthfully, I mean, you could do it kind of as an underground open source thing, but it'd still be kind of a bitch to maintain, you know?
That's true.
So, but yeah, I mean, that's the problem with everybody getting centralized on one platform is that there, I mean, it's not like you have any kind of a constitutional right to use YouTube's API to get around their controls, right? So
I pay for the internet. Damn it. Yes, I do.
So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to approach this because I don't like the idea of everything centralized on a few service providers because, I mean, the internet was designed around the idea that it wouldn't do that, that it would route around censorship, that you could have a truly democratized capitalist system where everybody could just compete fairly. But since, I mean, everyone flocks to one platform at a time, it seems like, or, you know, a handful of them.
That's human nature, man. The crowd goes with the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, the individual goes with the crowd, sorry. It's fucking hard to swim out there on your own.
That you've generally got to go. Oh, sorry. If there's only one person posting on Vimeo, why watch Vimeo?
Well, you make a great point. You know, if you create an actual, and like you said to start with, create an actual host, right, for people to come to, kind of like Patreon did to start with for the YouTube market when YouTube started shutting down the monetization of things. So it allows people to still get a revenue stream while still posting on YouTube. Well, why not kind of flip that and combine it and come up with something that where it's completely the best of both worlds, right?
Like basically combine Patreon. Talking... Oh, go ahead, Ari.
No. You're just about to make the point I was going.
Yeah, that you just take Patreon's business model, combine that with YouTube, and
right. How
would you make that work, and though? Because
sell out to the man.
Well, what Patreon does is locks up all the little stuff behind paywalls, right?
It does, yeah.
So how would you do that with a YouTube-style video?
I don't know that it locks it behind paywalls because you can do donations. Like, all the videos I watch that also have a Patreon backing, I'm watching the video, I'm just not paying Patreon.
Yeah. Because fuck those content providers. Do it for free, Dancing Monkey.
Well, no. I mean, they have posts on the Patreon pages that are behind paywalls. Like, if you go look for, like, different video clips, 3D rendering stuff... I was actually looking for some 3D printing stuff, and the guy had all of his guides. Like, the first one was on YouTube, and the rest were behind the Patreon wall. So, and a lot of artists.
There's a guy who does
too.
The whole thing with the air engines.
He does the same thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
So what you do is you don't build your – okay, so as a content creator – I'm filling the shoe of a content creator at the moment. So as a content creator, I'm not going to lock myself into one single income stream, right? So it's not like I have a job and this XYZ company or content location is my only source of income. However, I'm going to go to YouTube. If I get demonetized for that particular video, oh, well, okay, now I have... backup A, B, C, D, right? So that's kind of the same concept, at least within my current corporation, how we have multiple streams of revenue, right?
Sure.
And all corporations have multiple streams of revenue. It's not like you're putting all your eggs in one basket. You're allowing yourself to then filter to, oh, I need to spend an extra 5 minutes or 10 minutes, you know, clicking and filling out a few extra cells in a form, online form, for this particular site and this particular site, you know. So from a content creator, I don't care. Yeah, everything's going to be free as that goes. And if you know, Morps likes my video that I put out, and he's going to pay me through Patreon or whatever, or RU likes my you know, video that I put out, but he's going to pay me through something else. You know, nothing is... You know, you see what I'm saying, though. It's not that I'm saying you have to pay this in order to watch mine. Anybody that does that, you know, go fuck yourself, jump off a goddamn bridge. You're a fucking moron. You're never going to get money.
No, but I don't have any issues with dudes putting a video up and going, hey, if you like this video, go over to my Patreon and throw me a couple of bucks. I'm like, yeah, great. Make sure you do that at the end of the video. Nothing fucking sounds worth it. Hey, guys, I'm about to do a video, but before that, why don't you go shoot me a couple of dollars? You haven't even seen what I'm putting up, but pay me anyway. Like,
oh,
fuck
I love
you.
It.
And like and subscribe and hit the bell.
Yeah, before you ever get to the content, right?
You've already lost 10 points out of 20. You've got to work hard to get those 10 back before I come back to your channel. I'm a very picky consumer.
Unless I really want to see what you are getting ready to show me, possibly through the 10 seconds you've shown me beforehand and the title that you've given me, and you pull even the like and subscribe BS, right? Yeah. No, I'm off. I close it. Move on.
Yeah. I hear you, man. It's frustrating trying to find anything new on there. So... Anyways, though, so, I mean, yeah, the big draw of HookTube was, besides getting around the censorship, was, of course, that you weren't populating all this data up to YouTube. You weren't showing all your viewing habits up that way. So, I don't know. I mean, at least you're just doing the YouTube embed, so it's at least going to still get you around ads and stuff like that, but it's just not nearly as powerful as it used to be, which is unfortunate.
Adblock takes care of ads on YouTube.
That's true. Simple. That's true.
Anyway, Rockets now.
All right. Anybody else want to get any digs on that before we move on?
Nah.
All right, moving on. Next article is from the BBC. You sent me this a little while ago. iCloud data belongs to Apple's China or iCloud. Let's try this again. iCloud data belonging to Apple's China-based users is now in the hands of the Chinese government. The emails, pictures, and text messages of users in China are now being managed by a division of the state-owned firm China Telecom. Privacy advocates have warned that the shift could make user data vulnerable to state surveillance. Apple says the move to store user data locally was made to comply with Chinese authorities. In 2017, I just wish more of these companies would say, fuck you, China, and just leave when laws like this show up. I mean, China already requires you to partner with a local company so they can, you know, get copies of all the technology and software. I mean, it's just like, come on, guys, don't you see what they're doing?
It's not like they're respecting copyright law anyways. They're a different country.
That's a fair point. In 2017, Apple announced that it would be partnering with the Chinese local Chinese firm, Ginsuo Cloud Big Data Industry Development. Yeah, that sounds
that
like a China.
That doesn't sound ominous.
Love it.
That's like a B-grade sci-fi. Big bad corporation.
In handling operations of iCloud services for users in mainland China. In February this year, Cycros is arguing with us. He says China has a lot of customers. So.
Just.
In February this year, it was announced. iCloud data of users in China would move to a new data center in the Ginzhou province. Apple said the shift was made so it can comply with local cybersecurity laws. In a statement to Reuters, Apple said, "While we advocated against iCloud being subject to these laws, we were ultimately unsuccessful. That arrangement has now been complicated by a new arrangement between Apple's Chinese iCloud operator and the state-owned company China Telecom." Apple has confirmed to the BBC that China Telecom's Tianyi Cloud Division has signed with GCBD to provide provide storage for iCloud China. The change in operations means that the data of iCloud users in China, including emails and photos, is now handled by the state-owned service, a move that has led to concern for privacy advocates anxious that this will give the Chinese government easier access to personal information. Well, how else are they going to give you that... participation rating credit score thing. So, Joshua Rosenwig.
I don't think we did that story.
Yeah, we did.
We did it a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
The social rating.
Yeah, I was blanking.
You can't
on
leave
it.
The country if yours isn't high enough.
Joshua Rosenwig, Deputy Regional Director of Research at Amnesty International's office in Hong Kong, told the BBC that the new agreement with China Telecom puts Apple's Chinese users at risk. This move really undermines Apple's claim that it takes customers' privacy seriously. Apple shouldn't let this thirst for profits put its Chinese users at risk, he said. Apple famously launched its Mac line with a nod to Orwell and 1984. Now, it looks like the company, when it comes to privacy rights, Apple thinks some of its users are more equal than others. Damn, there's a reference. We wrote to Emmer Apple.
Through.
No, I was referring to the civil rights statement there, but okay.
Oh, I was going with the advertisement. Sorry.
Yeah, some users are more equal than others.
Animal Farm. Everyone loves Animal Farm.
We wrote to Apple for information on how it plans to protect its customers' right against the abuse of government requests for data. The company's silence in response is deeply concerning. Well, how long did you give them to respond? It doesn't say that. I kind of hate it when they say, well, they didn't respond. It's like, well, we noticed. We sent them an email like 5 minutes before we hit publish on the article. But that's not always. I don't know. I hate that. You know what I mean?
Yep. You know what you're telling.
In March, Amnesty International launched a campaign targeting Apple over its betrayal of millions of Chinese iCloud users, saying the company had made personal data vulnerable by handing over its China iCloud service to a local company. Chinese law forces foreign companies to use locally managed firms to store data, and Apple has said that it was compelled to move both iCloud user data and the encryption keys that protect it to comply with these rules. Before the migration, all iCloud encryption keys were stored on U.S. servers and therefore subject to U.S. litigation around requests for government access. With the iCloud servers now on Chinese soil, the Chinese government can use its own legal system to request access. When the partnership with GCBD was announced, Apple assured users that no backdoor would be created within its system, and that the company would retain control over iCloud encryption keys. Apple has told the BBC this will remain to be the case under the new agreement. Apple previously worked with China Telecom to store customer data on local servers in 2014 when the company said it was arranged to improve the speed and reliability of the service. In that case, however, all iCloud encryption keys were stored offshore. Yeah.
Just doing a little research on the telco, man. They're worth $600 billion.
Wow.
They're also rated 182nd in the Forbes 500 companies. It's not a small company, man.
No, I never said it was. I just hate that.
Yeah, they're a stranglehold. It looks like that they're the only player in the game, and that's the way they want to keep it.
Well, yeah, it's a government-funded. You can't compete with the government. They'll probably just shoot you over there.
On the outward, they just look like a regular company. But I don't know if I'd be comfortable.
Well, not only does China have a lot of control over a lot of these government-run companies, but the way they manipulate their currency while they're at it, so it's really hard to know what's real when it comes to Chinese companies. One of the reasons Chinese knockoffs are so good is because they're made in the same damn factory as the originals. They just march the first company out, march the second one in to make the copies. I mean, same machines, same material, just different brand on the damn things. So, I don't know, man. Of course, you know, there's different philosophies about it, too. It's like, well, you know, some people think that all designs ought to be open source, all software ought to be open source, and you just let everybody have everything. And, I mean, I don't know. That doesn't feel like the right answer, but I can see why some people really like it. But at the same time, I don't like the idea that companies are forced into it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I choose to give you my stuff. It's not okay if you rob me.
Yeah, okay. I agree with
Mad Men on that one.
Yeah, thank
I'll
you.
Go with Mad Men.
Mad Men with the poignant quote of the week. And
here's your G15 mug and your goblet from Goblets on the Go.
Oh, somebody's going to message us sometime and ask us where the hell that website really is.
I'll give you on $1 million idea, and it's because of my lack of forethought to go through with it. But so I think the mug thing's run its course now. I noticed a certain show had to drop their mug because nobody was buying it.
Oh, was it Chank? Please tell me Chank was throwing up a mug. That'd be amazing.
It's the Irish immigrant.
Oh, yeah. Okay, he was just doing that to make fun of people.
I know, but it was an ironic thing. He thought it would take off, but it didn't. And now everyone seems to be making fun of him.
I thought the mug thing was just like Crowder and Shapiro going at each other. I didn't know anybody else was doing it too.
Because Crowder got his mug just took off, man. Like, out of all of them, I think he's the one whose mug actually.
Well, it's a good
mug.
It's
a gimmicky thing. Well, it's gimmicky too.
Oh yeah,
he keeps updating different skits with it.
It's a wonderful ashtray. One of the best cigar ashtrays ever.
So,
what do we have here? Users.
Yeah. Okay. Next article is from Torrent Freak. Dutch anti-piracy group Breen has scored a partial victory against Usenet provider News Connection. The Court of Appeal ruled that the company must ensure that it can identify potential infringers. News Connection is not required to implement the strict measures Breen requested, but the court made it clear that pirates should not be anonymous. Dutch anti-piracy group Breen has targeted pirates of all shapes and sizes over the past several years. It's also one of the few groups to systematically track copyright infringers on Usenet, which still has millions of frequent users. Breen sets its aim on prolific uploaders and other large-scale copyright infringers. After identifying its targets, it asks providers to reveal the personal details connected to the account. Not all providers are eager to hand over this information. This is also true for News Connection. The Usenet provider was previously ordered by a Dutch court to hand over the IP addresses, payment information, name, and email addresses of all of three of its users. I thought it said all three of its users. I'm like, wait a minute. I can't be reading that right. However, the company appealed the verdict. News Connection argued that, among other things, it doesn't have direct access to the user's IP addresses because it's merely a reseller. The company added that the relevant jurisprudence in this area doesn't even apply in the case since the company operates as an intermediary. In a verdict issued this week, a court of appeals rejected these arguments. The court stressed that it's not impossible for the Usenet provider to get access to the information Breen It's not impossible for the Usenet provider. That is not a good That is not a good measure of whether or not we can compel a company to do something. Well, it's not impossible. I mean, that is not a good measurement.
Well, it's the antithesis of whole of networking. Good night.
And the possibilities of reality to me.
You could build an entire data center and house hard drives to farm the data we want. We're just going to order you to do it. For example, News Connection can request IP addresses of suspected pirates from its hosting provider. If a hosting provider refuses to hand over this information, then the Usenet provider can find another hosting provider that's more cooperative. Wow. That's their justification. Oh, well, if your hosting provider isn't giving you the information we're ordering you to get, you have to find a new provider. That's fucked.
But what if no one will give me this information, sir?
Then shut your business down, which is what they really want.
No business for you.
Furthermore, the court also states that even though it's a reseller, the Usenet provider must hand over the personal details it has on file for the alleged pirates Breen identifies. This includes the user's name and email address. There's also some good news for News Connection and its users. Breen requested that the Usenet provider to organize its administration in such a way that it can identify users more easily while keeping more detailed personal information. In other words, Breen was telling them, you have to reorganize the company to keep the records we want. The Court of Appeals argued that this goes too far as it might potentially violate the privacy of innocent customers. The court... Have you guys seen Usenet lately? The term innocent customers doesn't really apply. Just saying. The court made it clear that Usenet users have a right to privacy. However, those who are suspected of copyright infringement cannot be anonymous. You have the right to privacy until you're suspected of copyright infringement. God, that's a low bar.
Suspected.
That is a fucking low bar. Tweakers highlights that the court specifically notes that Breen's rights to protect creators prevails over the anonymity of Usenet users. During the appeal, Breen suggested several steps News Connection should take to verify the accuracy of user data. The court argued that it's not up to Breen to decide what steps the provider should take, but agreed that News Connection must take measures to ensure the personal information provided by its users is verified. The intermediary must take measures to verify customer identity. Breen cannot dictate what such measures are, and the intermediary must decide that itself, Breen director Tim Kurik informs Tornfreak.
How do you confirm the user data on a 104-year-old penguin? Does it have a driver's license? I wouldn't issue a penguin a driver's license.
127.0.0.1.
I imagine it is something along the lines of you have to submit an ID. That's what they want. Cypress in the chat room says...
Which kind of goes across the whole, you know, idea of Usenet, but oh well.
Yeah. Cypress in the IRC says, I suspect everyone with a binary user account, Usenet account, is either a pirate or a pedophile. So...
That's fucking harsh.
You know, the last couple of times I've looked around Usenet, I'm not certain that he's wrong. So,
did Elon Musk just tweet that? That sounds like something Elon would have done.
So, let's see. verified customer. Also, the intermediary cannot hide behind dependency on a third party that is unwilling to cooperate. They must secure connection or cooperation contractually or find another business partner, Kirk adds. Term Freak reached out to News Connection for comment on the ruling, but at the time of publication, they have yet to hear back. So, yeah, I just, I hate that they were able to say, no, you have to find a new business partner. That's kind of fucked up. Yeah. That's a little fucked up.
I guess they've looked at what peering agreements are. What if my provider won't tell them my shit?
Well, that's what they're saying.
Can you compel another company to do something based on what the law says?
Well, you can compel another company to do something when you're setting up the contracts with them, but they have to agree to it. That's the thing.
I mean, that's the whole point of signing a contract.
Yeah. What if you can't find a provider that's willing to provide this information to you? I guess you have to shut down. I mean, that's the thing. That's a hell of a thing.
A hell of a legal requirement.
Yeah.
Wow.
So what happens is, are you going to be doing any business in the Netherlands? This was Dutch, right?
Yes.
There's, what, 10 people there?
Well, above sea
level.
Four
of them are currently fucking a goat. Maybe the same goat.
I'm not sure the goat has a preference.
Any thoughts, are you?
No, I don't really, man. Just wielding a very big stick.
Static, any thought, man?
Negatory.
Ooh, this, I don't know, they might be able to take this to the EU court if it was a Dutch court.
Yeah, it was a Dutch court.
Because the EU courts override local municipalities.
That's kind of fucked up, if you think about it.
Oh, it's exceptionally fucked up. That's one reason Brexit happened. But yeah, take it to the EU court. See if they hose you any better.
Yep. All right, next story is from Fox 13 News. Judge jails defendant for failing to unlock phones in Tampa. So you could reasonably read this as Florida man.
Love Florida man.
It started out as a civil rights
superhero.
Yep. It started out as a civil rights battle in a Tampa courtroom, and now a cell phone password might be a defendant's key to freedom. A judge threw William Montanez behind bars for failing to unlock his phones Thursday, which wasn't how Montanez or his attorney expected the day in court to end. Basically, my client has been denied his liberty today without due process, said attorney Patrick Liddick. To understand how Montanez got here, we go back to June 21st. Montanez was on the road when he suddenly got pulled over for not properly yielding. He would not allow cops to search his car, so a drug-sniffing dog was brought in. A small amount of marijuana was allegedly found, and the cops asked to search his cell phones. Again, Montanez said no, so detectives got a warrant, which brought us to the constitutional challenge in court. Ludex says that cops are on a fishing expedition. There is no information that the state can show until I can and challenge the warrant itself that says, hey, what's on these two cell phones are directly related to the possession of a misdemeanor or to a possession of misdemeanor marijuana, argued Ludic. Prosecutor Tony Falcone countered. The guy's name is actually Falcone. It's dude's named after a Batman villain. Come on. Prosecutor Tony Falcone argued that the warrant is lawful. I think it's appropriate the court order the defendant to show cause. Ordering the defendant to show cause for not unlocking the cell. That's interesting.
A cause for dismissal,
not providing information.
Oh, dismissal. Okay. I misread it. Thank you.
Yeah.
After several minutes of vigorous arguments, Judge Gregory Holder ruled the cops could go through the cell phones. So out came the phones from the evidence bag. But Montanez said the two phones were new and he could not remember the passcodes to unlock them. I don't know the code, sir, he stated. Judge Holder then had Montanez try to unlock the second cell phone, but it was the same result, so the judge found him in civil contempt and threw him in jail. Recently, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled law enforcement must get a warrant to search cell phones in most cases. Ludic says that what happened to Montanez could happen to any of us. They have arrested you for anything, whether it's drugs, guns, you name it, and electronic devices nearby, they can get a search warrant and search it. And if you don't provide the information to search it, unlock it, because you want to keep the information private, we'll put you in jail, he said. Judge Holder also ruled if Montanez suddenly remembers his passwords, he will be released from jail. Otherwise, he could spend up to 6 months locked up.
Oh, it's nice that the judge gave him a time limit.
I'm just wondering if he really forgotten the passwords. If the phones truly are new and you forgot the passwords, I mean, he's fucked for 6 months.
So my phone is set up that after 5 attempts, it wipes the phone.
It seems like a rather high bar to pass to be able to say one way or the other, hey, I can unlock my phone under duress, by the way, because you are arrested.
So here's...
Just punch in something 5 times real quick, yeah, and it wipes the phone. Oh, look, my phone's unlocked now.
Yep, there's the welcome screen. I'm just wondering... I kind of liked the lawyer's argument. What's the relevance of the phones to marijuana possession?
True.
Although he
intent
had 2
to distribute.
Yeah.
Intent to distribute.
No, it wasn't enough for a distributing charge. They said misdemeanor. Yeah. He had
He might have sold it all. He was on his way home.
Yeah, he might have sold it, or it could be we're trying to get to the dealer. We believe he's stupid enough to label his pot contact and his cell phone weed dude.
question is where's the phone in relationship to where's the pot?
On the dude. The pot was in the car.
Did it say the phones were on the dude, though?
They were seized while he was being searched. I
think they were in the car.
And he's not contesting ownership. That's one thing I think he might have had. If they were just in the car, he could try to claim they weren't his, even though if it's in your car, it's assumed to be yours.
Yeah, he's just saying he couldn't remember the passwords.
Yeah. Idiots in jail because idiot had pot.
True.
There you go.
All right.
I do like the challenge of the relevance.
Yeah, I thought that was good, too, because it's like, well, what does this have to do with having pot? But, you know, you guys thoroughly said, well, we're looking for your dealer, so.
I can think of a reason.
He's in the wrong, though. He's committed a crime. He has a misdemeanor. They want to double check and make sure he's not a dealer, you know. It's not like, oh, wait a minute, we suspect that you have pot and let us search your phone. It's the fact that you have pot, let us search your phone now.
Smoke oh, yeah, the cops are in the right in this one. I just like the argument.
Don't fucking have weed in your pocket.
At least when you're speeding.
Or if you're in a state it's not legal in, like Cyclops.
Not yielding, you know. Yeah. Stop at every damn stop sign. It's yellow, slow the
laws
way
when
down.
You are not following the traffic law, following the legal laws.
Yeah. All right, let's move on here to this TechCrunch article. Google has been fined a record-breaking 4.34 billion euros by European antitrust regulators for abusing the dominance of its Android mobile operating system. Competition.
That's like 5 cents, right?
To them, yeah.
No, it is, I believe, 6 months' worth of their earnings.
Wow.
It's the largest fine ever on a tech company like this.
Competition Commissioner Margrethe Vestager, I have no idea how to say that, has tweeted to confirm the penalty ahead of a press conference about to take place. Stay tuned for more details as TechCrunch gets them. And the tweet is fine of $4.34 billion to Google for 3 types of illegal restrictions on the use of Android. The way it's cemented its dominance of the search engine, denying rivals the chance to innovate and compete on the merits. It is illegal under EU antitrust rules. Google now has to stop it. So in a longer statement about the decisions, Vestager said, today the mobile internet takes up more than half of global internet traffic and has changed the lives of millions of Europeans. Our case is about 3 types of restrictions that Google has imposed on Android device manufacturers and network operators to ensure that traffic on Android devices goes to the Google search engine. In this way, Google has used Android as a vehicle to cement the dominance of its search engine. And there's people at Google going, yes, that's why we wrote it. Actually, they didn't. They bought it. Back when it was an early open source project, they took it over.
And this is a bullshit ruling. But continue on. I'll explain why I think it's bullshit later.
Okay. In this way, Google has used Android as a vehicle to cement its dominance of the search engine. These practices have denied rivals the chance to innovate and compete on the merits. They have denied European consumers the benefits of effective competition in the important mobile sphere. And this is illegal under EU antitrust rules. In particular, the EU has decided that Google has required manufacturers to pre-install the Google search app and browser app Chrome as a condition for licensing Google's app store, the Play Store. Made payments to certain large manufacturers and mobile network operators on condition that they exclusively pre-install the Google search app on their devices, and has prevented manufacturers wishing to pre-install Google apps from selling even a single smart mobile device running on alternative versions of Android that were not approved by Google, so-called Android forks. I don't know what they're talking about there. Chinese manufacturers ship those things all the time. The decision also concluded that Google is dominant in the markets for general internet search services, licensable smart mobile operating systems, and app stores for the Android mobile system. I like how the company that makes Android is being charged with being too dominant in the app store for that mobile system. it's Apple's dominant on iPhone's store too, but I guess that doesn't matter.
Google pointed that out at trial as well.
Oh, did they really?
Yep.
Don't get me wrong. They're not. There's probably a lot more antitrust in Google's future. The way they're larger than like the rest of the internet now, at least on server infrastructure. But I think some of the arguments are kind of specious. So. Do you want to jump into it, or do you want me to keep reading? Because this article is like really long, and I'm not going to read the whole thing anyways.
Okay. The reason I call this crap, what they're shitting on Google for, is if these manufacturers, and there's three different charges because there are different contracts with different manufacturers. So with some manufacturers, Google is waiving the licensing fee for Android if you preload their apps. So it's
just like what Microsoft does normally, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's not preventing anyone from installing a new app. So my last Google phone I bought came preloaded with their GPS stuff. I could go to their store, and I could get other free GPS and download it and install it. It's just their free one was already on the phone.
Conveniently.
There's nothing preventing me from going to one of their competitors. It's still there. It's even still in Google Play. Another thing they brought up, in some manufacturers, Google is paying the company to preload their shit. So this company has signed a contract. Google, not only will you not charge us for using Android as our operating system, but you'll give us so much cash if we just load your stuff onto this phone. Anyone else, Microsoft, could go to a company, or maybe even that same company, and say, hi, instead of you getting money from Google to preload their shit, we will pay you to preload our shit.
I hate the preloaded shit.
This, I think everybody does.
It may be crap. You might not like Google. Google didn't do anything wrong with this. There can still
Google
be competition,
did nothing wrong.
And they're
okay,
not forcing anyone out.
There's the whole mentality of a company can do nothing wrong. But continue.
Okay, well, the people running Google in this instance with the whole, we won't charge you for using our OS if you load our shit, or here's buttloads of money, preload our shit. Someone else could buy the company.
Yeah.
And even if no one does, I can still download all of their competitors' stuff, either buy it if I think it's better, or download the free shit.
Go
They're
ahead,
not
Static.
Keeping anyone out of the market.
So here's the thing. The average consumer, okay, goes and buys said phone. Said phone is preloaded with Google's software. Google Play Store. What do you think Google Play Store will have that other... let me back up. What do you think that phone will have over any other phone? Take a different approach. Okay, sorry. Putting everything together. Here we go. One phone. Let's just say there was one phone made. Google went to them and said, okay, you load our stuff. It's the Google Play Store. It's only the Google Play Store. Unless you're savvy enough in the technology field to be able to load possibly another app store, if there is any out there, right?
There's several,
well,
and it's not
well, there's
that
a
hard.
Second problem.
No. I got that.
Security versus...
That's not my point, though.
Okay.
What I'm saying is, you're saying that Google is not preventing anyone. I fully agree. Anybody can go, but any company can go to this manufacturer of this phone and say, hey, load our stuff. However, Google, being the size and complexity that they are, can squash most any of them out there. Correct?
True.
Yeah.
Well, they're all also the people who are providing the hardware. So they have the innate knowledge of what the actual setup is for the hardware. What makes it work better, what makes it work worse, and can authorize it like Apple can with their App Store, you know?
I understand what you're saying, and I kind of disagree, because you look at what Apple used to be and the fact that now they're running Intel versus what they used to run. So I mean,
well, I'm just saying on the point of the whole, you can only install on trusted platforms from trusted suppliers.
I don't like Google as a whole, so I think Google should be investigated. But, you know, hey.
So should Apple, but I'm not going to argue.
Don't disagree with that either.
Nope.
So later in the article, they talk about arguments for trying to split Google up, force them to do a split. But they decided they don't think it's going to solve anything, so they're not really following that. I think Google started lobbying pretty hard after that started being talked about. So... I don't know. I just, yeah, it's very reminiscent of the Microsoft stuff from, you know, the 90s.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And to the up you in the 90s, I'm using Firefox. See how easy that was for me not to use Internet Explorer?
Oh, God, if you're only in a business environment. Anyways.
I know. I use it at work a lot, but even at work, I could have used Firefox. It's on my computer.
No, there's a lot of websites that are written against Internet Explorer because they know everyone has it. So, at least in business. Anyways, yeah, it is an amazing amount of money they're finding them. And the fact that it is only 6 months of their profit is like...
Oh, dude, it's more than the GDP of some members of the EU.
Where does that money go?
I thought that was scary. The money that they're being fined?
Yeah, where's it go?
The EU General Fund.
Oh, shit. That's
a slush fund.
Yeah, it's just going to disappear.
Oh, yeah, it's a slush fund. They're talking about building their own army, so it might go into an army.
That's how they're funding it. They're just going to make Google pay for it.
No, they will not beat us into Space Force. I mean, I'm going to have to concede Russia technically did, because they did put a 35mm cannon on one of their space stations. But other than Russia, we will militarize space first.
So you say.
And it'll be brought to you by Starbucks.
Click here to learn more. Service guarantee citizenship.
Damn.
I love
well
this statement. I don't
so
know.
So much sugar, your eyes will roll back in the back of your head.
I don't know the full context of it, but the statement in the article says, you can impose a fine if someone has done someone wrong. You cannot impose a fine because you need the money.
Oh! It's like, well, how else are we going to fund that army?
Oh, that's great.
Actually, I wouldn't be surprised if that's what they intended to do. It's like, yeah, we'll just fund Google. Or we'll just make Google fund
our
army. Oh, no.
That's what Google needs to start doing. Google, we funded the EU for 4 years.
How do you know they're not doing that, by the way? Just going to announce that off to as it says.
They're not winning any friends with that slogan. We funded the EU.
I thought their worst slogan was do no evil. Oh, wait,
they changed
slogan.
It.
Google's new slogan is, we are the one world order now.
We are Borg.
What is Google's slogan?
Anyways.
Don't be evil is the motto. First introduced around 2000. Is it still Don't Be Evil?
No, they changed
nope.
it this year.
They gave up on it.
Now it's Do the Right Thing.
Rocket Snail.
Yeah.
That's a little, objective.
Yeah.
I think the word would be.
Last article I have for tonight in the news is from Beeping Computer. Or, I'm sorry, Bleeping Computer. Beeping Computer, something else. That's the server closet. Anyways, Robo sent a...
That's normal.
Yeah, it's normal. Just ignore those alarms. Robo sent... The said parties, anybody who's worked in a data center knows exactly what I'm talking about.
That's why I'm laughing.
Yeah, you got some temperature alarms on your servers? I don't care. Yeah, you got some dead hard drives? Yeah, that's okay. RoboSynth.
They'll rise with the second coming. We'll be fine.
RoboSynth, a Virginia Beach-based political robocall firm, has exposed the personal details of hundreds of thousands of U.S. voters, according to the findings of a security researcher who stumbled upon the company's database online.
Oh, geez.
The researcher, Bob Dicato of Cromtech Security, says he discovered the data using a recently launched online service called Gray Hat Warfare that allows users to search publicly exposed Amazon Web Services data storage buckets. Such buckets could never be left exposed to public access, or should never be left exposed to public access, as they could hold sensitive data. I think we talked about Gray Hat Warfare, didn't we?
Gray Hat Warfare.
I think it was in one of the Digital Dojos we talked about. No, it was a different tool that did the same thing. I don't think it was this one specifically, but right around that time, a bunch of these AWS search tools came out. Dijenko found RoboSynth exposed AWS bucket holding by searching for the term voters. He searched for this particular term because last year he also found a gigantic MongoDB database exposing voter records of over 19 million Californians. Personal detail. The server that drew Dachenko's attention this time contained 2,584 files, which the researcher later connected to RoboSynth. The type of user data exposed in RoboSynth's bucket included full name, suffix and prefix, phone numbers, cell and landline, address with house, street, city, state, zip, and precinct, political affiliation provided by state or inferred based on voting history, age and birth year, gender, jurisdiction breakdown based on district, zip code, precinct, and county and state, and demographics based on ethnicity, language, and education. I mean, all you need is a social, and you're home gold with all that shit.
Well, hell, with enough social engineering, you don't need that.
That's also true.
Anyways.
Other data found on the servers, but not necessarily personal data, included audio files with pre-recorded political messages used for robocalls. I wouldn't mind getting my hands on some of those just so you can chop them up and edit them and have some fun with them. You know, according to RoboSynth's website, the company was not only providing robocalling services, political surveys, and inquiries, but also was selling this data in raw format. Clients can now purchase not anymore, it's free if you know what URL to get. Clients can now purchase voter data directly from their robocall provider. The company's website reads, "We provide voter files for every need, whether it be for a new robocall or for simply to update records for door knocking. The company sells voter records for the price of 3 cents a record. Leaving the core of its business available online in an AWS bucket without authentication is self-defeating." Dijenko says he notified the company about the exposed database, and they secured it shortly after his report. "We're a small shop. I'm the only developer, so keeping track of everything can be tough," a RoboSynth employee told Dijenko. Leaks of U.S. voter records have been common these days. Back in June 2017, a security firm UpGuard found an Amazon S3 bucket containing the details of over 198 million U.S. voters. Back in November of 2017, Amazon rolled out changes to the AWS admin dashboards to warn customers that they're exposing S3 buckets. And I will tell you right now, most developers ignore those warnings. They think they're funny.
Wow.
Because it's like, no, we're not securing that. That's too hard.
Yeah, developers why, like that.
I
that's
wish
why
I wasn't
as a voter,
up.
I like to change things up and throw off everything.
Just vote. What'd you vote this year? Frog party. Wait, what?
I don't like them putting chemicals in the water that turn the freaking frogs gay.
Anyways.
Frogs gay.
Smoke weed every day.
Every day.
every day. Frog's gay every day. Anyways, moving on. Rocket Snail.
No comment on the robocall database?
I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
All right.
Oh, who was their biggest customer? The DNC or the RNC? It doesn't say, does it?
It didn't say.
Ah. Kind of wondering the odds of my shit being out there.
Oh, it's out there, madman. You know it's out there.
The Democratic Socialists. Wait, what?
Woohoo! Not a part of that one. Fuck you guys. I'm safe.
Oh, fuck. So, anyways, let's do this. All right, I got two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is a fork of the old school Synergy software, because if you're not aware...
Oh, God, really? Awesome.
Okay. Sorry. If you're not aware, a Synergy went pay, what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, something like that? And so they grabbed...
Asshole.
So somebody grabbed the open source version of Synergy and forked it and called it Barrier. So from the actual wiki page on the GitHub page, Barrier is is KVM software forked from Simulus's Synergy 1.9 codebase. Synergy was a commercialized reimplementation of the original Cosmos Synergy written by Chris Schoenerman. Whereas Synergy has moved beyond its goals from the 1X era, Barrier aims to maintain that simplicity. Barrier will let you use your keyboard and mouse from Machine A to control Machine B or more, and it's that simple. So, basically, they're just trying to maintain and keep it working. Currently, they have it working on Windows, OS X, Linux, FreeBSD, and they're currently looking at Wayland. So, looks like it's fairly, you know, the GitHub's still getting updates. Looks like about a month old is the last commit, 16 days is the last commit, so it's an actively maintained project. And, yeah. So, hey, it's forked from Synergy Core, and now they're maintaining their own version of it. I think that's pretty cool.
Sweet, Marps. Wow. I do appreciate this information, because I was one of the ones who used Synergy a lot back in the day, and when it went pay to play, I just said, no, thank you. And then now we've got something that we can actually use that's functional and open source.
Yeah,
thank you, sir.
I kept my hands on old copies of Synergy for a long time. So I've kind of moved away from using it, but I'm also trying to get away from the 20 computers around my desk setup that I was using for a while there. But
it'd be nice to be able to get rid of the clutter of some keyboards and mice.
Yeah,
but we'll get there.
I need to redo my desk again, and I need to try to get the show system down to just like some virtual machines instead of having two computers involved. But
audio is a finicky beast.
Oh, dude, you have no fucking clue.
I have a clue, but not a fucking clue.
You know,
I will give you that.
How many times have I redone the broadcasting and setup system for Galaxy 15?
This will be the 12th time.
So at least once a year.
An enjoyable frustration of torture.
It was at least 5 times in 1 year. In the beginning,
it was the point where, I mean, I think I had everybody in the TeamSpeak channel just lose it at me when I said I was going to mess with it again.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was back when Big, Lore, and Syntax all actually were doing shows.
And all of them threatened to quit if I messed with it again. So I was like, okay, never mind. And we left it alone for a while until it broke. So then I had to redo it, but... Anyways, the last thing I have for tonight is, now I've not actually used this, but I've seen a lot of other people using it on YouTube videos and the like, and it looks pretty interesting. I think it's eventually not going to be free, but right now it's a free soft phone that you can just kind of set up. It's called Fire RTC, and it's got basically a SIP, but I think it also hooks right into the browser, so you don't even need an agent. And you can do call recording. It's got Chrome apps, Android stuff. So, and
it's very difference between this and like a Google Hangout sort of number.
It's SIP.
Ooh. So I'm trying it right now.
You can hook into other soft phones and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I see.
You can also set your caller ID to whatever the fuck you want. So, you know, they know people are using this for prankage. I actually saw it on YouTube because a guy was pranking scammers and using this to call them so he didn't have to go buy burner phones or anything. So I thought that was cool. But yeah, it easily records and shares phone calls. So I thought it was cool. I don't know how good it is, and because it's completely free, I don't know. You know, they're advertising the call recording, so they might be recording every call that goes through them and building some. I don't know what they'd be doing with it, but something. So who knows, right?
It's
but,
enough.
You know, if you need a quick and easy way to get a phone number for making, you know,
whatever purpose you may need,
calling phone sex or lines not. Or something. What happens if you dial a 1-900 number from one of these things? Like a Google.
Give me one, I'll try it.
I don't know.
You would.
Are you? So you said you were trying this, Static. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's very interesting. Yeah.
I'm going to start getting calls with Wing Dings as phone numbers again. That's what happens.
You just
when
keep
Skype
ignoring him, Madman. That's what you usually do.
Wing Dings.
So when I set it as my caller ID and then I call my cell, uh-huh. It's not working now. It's just ringing.
Oh, really? Maybe it takes a bit for that to propagate out.
Possible.
So, anyways, I've seen people using it to prank scammers, so I thought it was worth passing it along. And they even have on the FAQ that it's like, how are you guys making money? And they're like, yeah, we don't know yet, but we've got a donation page. So, but it uses the RTC protocol, so it's you know, webcam and microphone just built into the browser. You don't need, you know, like a thick client or anything. But it has a SIP address, so you can actually do, you know, SIP calling. So but, yeah. Let's see. When I change my caller ID, you get a failed message. You're in valid format. I'm just kind of looking through here to see if it said anything about my caller ID not updating.
I just tried it again, and it went to my voicemail stuff.
Yeah, it said that. Cool. When I transfer to my mobile phone, we go straight to voicemail. See above, when I call my mobile phone, it goes straight to voicemail. Short answer is the transfer calls to your mobile phone. It's best not to have your caller ID set as your phone number. Also, make sure you test this feature by calling conference or test before trying it on a live call. When testing, many of our customers like to call their mobile phones. Many customers also like to change their caller ID to their mobile phone number. Most mobile carriers will interpret this as a user checking his or her voicemail.
Okay, so, I just changed my caller ID. Settings update failed. So it has to be a phone number?
Well, it has to be in a certain format. So it has to be 1 plus NPANXXYYYY, so number. Yeah, it has to be a number. So I guess
soul of the devil, and then everything will be set up properly.
Oh, no. Static. Set it as my phone number, and then call your phone, and then see if my phone number pops up.
One sec.
I love this at the bottom of the FAQ. May I use Fire RTC to scam bait? While we do not actively push scam baiters, Fire RTC is not meant in any way to be used to flood or DDoS a call center, even if it is aimed at scammers. As such, Fire RTC will temporarily block users that make too many calls in a short period of time. Additionally, making calls programmatically with Fire RTC is a violation of our terms of service.
Hey,
we do not want to add a CAPTCHA. Did it call him? Did it work? I hear a phone ringing.
Yes, it did.
So I have no idea what this thing's collecting.
Checking the auto qual.
I mean, it could be collecting all kinds of data on you, but I just thought it was cool. Free phone calls, right? Remember back in the day, I mean, it used to be a bitch to fuck with pay phones to get the free phone calls. Now you can just open a web browser. RU's muted. He's gone away. He said, fuck this. I got phone calls to make.
He's like, I found out about something new.
He's calling a bunch of Indians right now.
Please do the needful. Anyways,
I have a camel. How do you do the needful?
Restricted is calling me. Gee, I wonder who that is.
In a certain location, and things magically happen.
Gee, also, Static, I wonder who Restricted is.
What?
I wonder who Restricted is.
Who? I don't know. What are you talking about?
Yeah, don't worry about it. Anyway. Anyways, that's all I have for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Galaxy 15 is every... the Galaxy 15 radio site and the subreddit. Peer Decking is every Thursday, or at least we try to. You know, if something comes up at work or I'm just, like, not feeling up for it, we might skip a show. But we haven't skipped one lately, so we're not doing too bad here. Laser, closing thoughts.
I think I got to watch out for online privacy, and I will definitely explore this new Synergy fork.
Static, closing thoughts.
I'm looking for 1-900 numbers now.
Boom, chicka bow wow.
Madman, closing thoughts.
The price of graphics cards have gone down about $50, and $487 from now, I will have my computer finished.
Nice.
Or Sunday.
Are you?
It looks like shipping day is Sunday.
Shipping day is Sunday. Are you? Are you back? Or are you gone? Do we lose Are You?
He's fucking a koala.
Ouch.
Only after you set it on fire. Until then, it's fine.
Bring out the gimp.
All right. Well, we'll let Are You skip out on closing thoughts since he's gone AFK. And that's all I have for tonight.
I have one for you. I have a website.
Oh, no.
Phonelosers.org.
Something for the next Digital Dojo.
The Enrichment Center once again reminds you that Android Hell is a real place where you will be sent at the first sign of defiance.
I'm a pioneer. Explorer. I'm a human. And I'm coming.
All right. I'm done. I'm going to play the Pac-Man sound.